Welcome to the 138th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I am your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. Today, I have with me Addie Delaney Meinrich, my registered dietitian and daughter. So welcome, Addie.
Hello.
So this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we're going to dedicate this podcast to breast cancer, not necessarily awareness and detection, but more on the line of prevention. Just to kind of go over some of the statistics, you know, 1 in 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer every year. And it's this time of year with the pink labels on things and get your mammogram and the pink balloons and the 5K runs. It's a little bit disconcerting because we start to focus on, well, if we detect things early, then we'll be okay. And we're empowered by knowing that somebody's looking out for us, but that's not really the case. If you look at when breast cancer is detected, there's 1 billion cells by the time a tumor is 1 centimeter in size. And that means that the woman has been living with this cancer for about 10 years. And so, you know, when treatment is started, the duration of cancer really hasn't changed in women over the years. The duration of survival has changed, but the actual death from cancer really hasn't changed. And, you know, there's been a big swing towards the genetics of breast cancer and the BRCA1 gene abnormalities. There's the gene as well as the protein, so the BRCA1 protein as well as the BRCA1 gene. And we know that if you have the gene, you have an increased risk of getting breast cancer. Up to in the numbers they quote are like 80% if you live to age 90. So that's kind of ominous. And if you have the gene, your ovarian cancer is increased 55%. So a lot of people have turned, and some famous actresses have gone to radical mastectomies. And actually, over the last from 2005 to 2013, the increase of mastectomies has gone up 36%. And the reality of, you know, if you talk to Dr. Esselstyn, who was a head of breast cancer surgery at Cleveland Clinic, you know, when the breast is taken off, there's still tissue left. So it really doesn't decrease a woman's risk of getting breast cancer. If anything, maybe the detection ability is probably going to be decreased. And if we look at the surgical procedure of mastectomies over the last, you know, 50, 60 years, it's become very, it was started out being as radical as you possibly could get, with actually even taking ribs and as much skin as they possibly could. Then, you know, it got down to just the breast and the lymph nodes, and there's a whole host of side effects from that. And we do know that lumpectomy, has the same survival benefit as the radical mastectomy, and even probably lymph node dissection is more than needs to be done because you know, once that there probably are microscopic cells throughout the body already, and we know that the treatment doesn't really change a whole lot. When we look at risk, if you look at the China study with Dr. Campbell. The Chinese girls, you know, their reproductive lifespan is much shorter, and that's one thing is associated with a decreased risk of breast cancer. And there are basic, you know, I guess what I'd like to talk today about, Addie, is as Americans and people eating the standard American diets are similar to that. What can we do to empower ourselves and decrease the risk of getting this disease as opposed to detecting it and then perhaps decreasing the risk of recurrence? So with that, I'd like to kind of focus on a few things, you know, one being nutrients in general, fiber, the dairy intake in the United States and in countries that have a high incidence of breast cancer, and what we can do with exercise to help. So, again, welcome, Addie. And that was a lot to kind of put on your plate right at front. But let's start by talking a little bit about fiber, because nobody talks about fiber deficiency in the United States. But you know, we're all worried about getting our protein, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a great place to start because, you know, recommended intake for, you know, men and women, let's just say it is around 30, 32 grams per day. And the average American is only getting about 15, and that is average, which meaning a lot of people aren't even meeting 50% of the recommended fiber intake. And as we've discussed before, you know, fiber is crucial for not only what we're going to talk about, breast cancer prevention, but also general health, gut function and motility. It's also helpful with diabetes and blood glucose management, as well as heart disease and links to, you know, cholesterol and things of that nature. So, but in particular with fiber, there's been some studies shown just a 10 gram per day increase in fiber intake can lower a woman's breast cancer risk by 7%, up at just 5 more grams to 15 grams per day increase can lower your breast cancer risk by 15%. So just imagine if we actually would be meeting our recommended fiber intake, we would be so much farther ahead of the game, in addition to the other antioxidant benefits, as well as polyphenols and things of that nature that you're getting only from plant foods. And just to highlight, not to state the obvious, you are only getting fiber from your plant-based sources. No meat, no dairy, and no reconstructed fiber supplement has the same capabilities as the good old natural from the ground plant sources.
All right, so let's do some examples. So if I wanted to, if you were meeting with somebody for the first time, and let's say they were on a standard American, they were using a standard American diet, they were just starting to transition to a plant-based diet, What's a good way to get 5 to 10 more grams of fiber in your diet daily?
There's a couple of different ways you can do this. Whole grains are a great option. So instead of in the morning doing, you know, your processed toast or your cereals or processed foods, swapping out for a half a cup of rolled oats, not instant. So even if you're doing the instant oats, those fibers or the grains are cut. There's also sodium added. So really sticking to the rolled oats that your body is going to get the full benefit from, you know, adding, you know, an extra serving of fruits or vegetables to each meal, you know, adding a cup for lunch, adding a cup for dinner. Also, swapping out your snacks is also a great way to start. So if you're just doing, you know, very processed carbohydrate snacks like chips or crackers or cookies of that nature, swapping it out for some colorful vegetables is a great way to get some fiber added to your diet.
Great, great. And then, you know, we know from the China study that most, that consuming dairy and the dairy protein casein stimulates the production of cancer cell growths. And when Dr. Campbell did his original study with breast cancer cells, the casein protein increased the growth of the cells. They took the protein down and it decreased. And we know that when the animal protein goes up, starting over 6% of the calories, that's when you start to see an increase in curve of cancers in general, and breast cancer is certainly one of them. And a lot of times people, when we talk dairy, they forget about where that cow milk actually came from. It came from a pregnant cow that had a lot of estrogen just because of the pregnancy and all the growth hormones that are supposed to be for the baby cow to make the cow grow very rapidly. So that's a huge source of estrogen, not to mention the exogenous estrogen that these animals may have been given in some sense. So, switching out dairy, switching to, you know, another alternative milk could help out in a variety of ways, could it not?
Yes. So soy, and another aspect of, you know, breast cancer incidences in Asian populations being so much lower is also related to their higher intake of soy products, as well as a lower intake or no intake of dairy products until, you know, diets and countries become a little bit more Americanized. But if you go into rural areas of these Asian countries where there really isn't any dairy, but there's high consumption of soy, and really what that means is 2 to 3 servings per week on a consistent basis of soy per day, starting early in life. You know, they've looked at, you know, increasing childhood soy intake decreases your breast cancer risk in half. So there are some benefits to beginning in teen and adult years always, but that's another reason why, you know, start young with these good nutrition practices, because, you know, there's a lot of controversy around soy in the diet and, you know, increase of breast cancer risk, but really compared to dairy, where you're getting a mammalian estrogen component, a hormone, compared to a phytoestrogen, which is from a plant, there's no comparison. Because another great thing about soy is you have that phytoestrogen, which combined to the hormone receptor sites on those hormone-related tumor cells, that can help not only with prevention, but there's also been some incidences of decrease in recurrence in postmenopausal women of their breast cancer once they have introduced a consistent soy intake into their nutritional regimen. So there's a lot of benefit to increasing your soy intake and getting rid of any dairy products.
It's really a shame that, you know, the schools, of course, the schools are sponsored so much, but the dairy that the, you know, the kids that are, that they have to have, you know, a box of milk, at least once in the program.
Well, and you look at, you know, so we're doing that at schools and nobody wants to talk about early ages of menarche now. Nobody wants to talk about increases in acne across the board or, you know, puberty coming earlier and developmental changes in children coming earlier and earlier, and the increase and push by the Dairy Council and the USDA on dairy intake and dairy consumption. No one makes that correlation, but everyone's very quick to attack soy. But I always encourage people to, you know, be informed and educate yourself on who you're getting your dietary recommendations from, because a lot of the funding pushes a lot of the nutritional campaigns. So always educate yourself, especially when it comes to school nutrition and school systems.
What about the concerned parent that says, you know, I mean, other than the protein, the next thing that comes up is, well, you know, all the milk mustaches and build your bones and build strong bones with the dairy, you know, as opposed to, you know, now what are these kids going to do? My, you know, Johnny doesn't want to eat green leafy vegetables and I don't like to cook beans. And so soy has, most soy milks are fortified as well, correct?
Yes, they are fortified as well, you know, a vitamin D and then their calcium content. And then, you know, different ways to introduce vegetables, you know, ways to hide them until taste buds change and adapt, because as your child grows, their taste buds are growing along with them and changing, and, you know, going through ways of cooking processes with your kids to get them involved, but, you know, hiding their greens in brightly colored fruit smoothies or doing black bean brownies or being creative in how, you know, doing your bean burgers or things of that nature, just to name a few. But there are plenty ways to get enough of those bone building minerals that aren't also going to attribute to increased hormonal exposure as well as increased fat intake, among other things.
And then, you know, sources of estrogen where you don't even expect it. You know, again, eating animal protein and burgers and things, a lot of those, you know, have been given extra hormones. But how about, you know, BPA-containing cans? In the United States, unless a can is organic, it has a BPA lining, which is an estrogen stimulator. And, you know, a lot of people have become aware about the BPA-free movement, you know, in some of the plastic containers. They've recently taken them out of baby bottles. They're still in a lot of crazy things. And, they're still in the lining of cans. But there are also these derivatives of BPA that just have a different, a different name, so to speak. So, you know, buying organic cans when you can, or, again, cooking the beans from scratch, which are a lot cheaper anyway, will save you an extra, a little bit of a hormone dose.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you're cutting down. So, I mean, set yourself up nutritional wise, because, I mean, obviously there's so many environmental factors that we don't always necessarily have control of. But you do have control of some things in life. You know, you have genetics, you have environmental. So there are, you know, the uncontrollables, but the things you do have control over, what you choose to put into your body. It's what I tell people, you know, become empowered by educating yourself on how you can be in somewhat of control of your future health.
Yeah, and just like, you know, these abnormal genes, you know, it can be kind of like having a, you know, hand grenade, but as long as you don't pull the pin, you're okay. So the whole science of epigenetics and how we turn on and turn off and change in the phenotype, or the way this protein is expressed, as opposed without changing the genes. So we can have bad genes, they just don't necessarily have to be turned on or be active. And largely, the biggest thing that we do is eat. So we have the biggest, you know, control over what nutrients we put in our body. So we know that, you know, decreasing estrogen is a good thing, especially, you know, estrogen from other sources. And but there's also a lot of protective benefits in vegetables with regards to different phytonutrients. And, you know, one in simple things, you know, let's talk a little bit about green tea, how simple, you know, as opposed to soft drinks.
Right. So, I mean, there's been a lot of studies done on, one, you're not getting a sugar sweetened beverage. So we can start off with that. You're also going to get a lot of anti-inflammatory benefits from regular green tea intake that would look a little bit like, you know, 3 to 4 cups a day on a regular basis, or incorporating it in, you know, its ground leaf form into smoothies or different ways of that nature. But yeah.
Yeah, as long as, you know, if you look at green tea, green tea from China, those leaves may be exposed to lead. There was a study by nutritionfacts.org. But otherwise, if you get green tea from other areas, you can just throw those tea bags right into your smoothie. A leaf's a leaf. And, you know, again, when we make teff on Saturdays, I typically throw a little green tea in there just to kind of give us some antioxidants. There was this study from Perth, Australia, that a 1/3 of an ounce of green tea decreased breast cancer by 89% as far as overall as this observation study. So the more green tea that these Asian women drank, there was an 89% reduction in breast cancer incidence. And this is thought possibly there's an enzyme which most people have heard of that is called an aromatase, and this enzyme is used actually in chemotherapy, and aromatase enzyme inhibiting the enzyme called aromatase, it will also decrease your estrogen. And so green tea is one of these things, pomegranates another, and mushrooms. So mushrooms are very, very, very good. They also contain lectins, which have been shown to decrease cancer and decrease the cancer cells from growing and dividing.
And it's not even like eating those in humongous quantities either. That's also very encouraging. I mean, they have shown in just a half a mushroom a day, there's been some studies when you break it down into, you know, populations that they've looked at, the quantity that's beneficial. So just making it, you know, like soy, a part of your regimen throughout the week, you can see some benefits and preventative ways to go about eating.
So one thing, you know, a cancer cell, you know, cancer starts by damage to the DNA, and then there's damage to the enzymes, and then there's the development of a cancer cells, and then those cancer cells start to grow. And cancer cells can only grow, and the clumps can get bigger if they have a blood supply. So that blood supply is actually called angiogenesis. And there are some things that can, so by stopping the blood flow to cancers is one way of how cancers regress and shrink. And, you know, a lot of things do that too. You know, that's why the colorful fruits, you know, fruits are so important in preventing cancer. So the more color, the better. The resveratrol and red grapes, pistachios, blueberries, cranberries. And then, and another thing good is cacao. So cacao powder that, you know, as a treat can actually inhibit angiogenesis.
Yeah, who would have thought you could get something that is healthy and actually tastes good too? Oh my. Breaking news.
Yeah, so and so let's talk about cacao powder and how you may use it in a healthy type of way. You know, this weekend, for example, I'll give you one of mine. I took the pumpkin and put some cacao powder in there and basically made a chocolate pudding with a little bit of maple syrup. And you talked about the black bean brownies.
Black bean brownies, if you are in the need of a chocolatey fix early in the day, add a little bit to your oatmeal in the morning. Add a little bit to a smoothie at night. You know, just get creative. You know, it's when you are doing a rich source of nutrients that's all like in the cacao that's not processed, you know, while you're still getting that chocolatey flavor, it is so much better than, you know, your typical Snickers bar or milk chocolate or something like that. So, you know, I always encourage people too, if you are a chocolate fan, you know, not to get hung up on the chocolate, but we do have Halloween coming up as well, you know, gradually switching to a dark chocolate, a cacao powder is a great way to still be able to have a treats in your life, but not have to suffer health-wise.
Yes. And, you know, there's, I was at a lecture at the International Plant-Based Nutrition Conference a couple of years, and they had a researcher talking about angiogenesis, and they started looking at different vegetables and, you know, which part is the healthiest part. And typically, you know, we throw a lot away a lot of the good parts of vegetables. You know, the broccoli stems, 2.5 times the anti or angiogenesis inhibition than the actual florets. So making a broccoli soup, you know, using those stems to just, you know, put in your Instapot and add to soups is a good way to get that nutrient in. I like the one about the carrot greens, same thing. The carrot greens, the carrot tops, have 2.5 times more nutrients as far as decreasing angiogenesis than a regular carrot. So, you know, there's people ask sometimes, you know, whether do I eat things cooked or do I eat things raw? But sometimes cooking things actually releases these nutrients as opposed to you know, eating them raw.
Yeah, I think it's all about balance and different ways to incorporate things into your diet. I also encourage people to, you know, kind of loop back to increasing these things with your children as well. trying cooking things differently or trying them raw. You know, it might just be, or even if it's not your children, if it's your spouse, if it's your friends that you're trying to help, you know, encouraging people to try to eat things differently because, you know, you do get different benefits depending on how you're serving them.
I agree. And then, you know, when it comes to, you know, a lot of times people start to become plant-based and, or I'll suggest it, and they switch, you know, people that the kind of the go-to or fallback is pasta with a marinara sauce. But buying the pasta sauces we've talked about with, from a cardiovascular standpoint, you know, they can have up to about 30% oil in them. So I encourage people to make their own sauce, and it doesn't have to be, you know, your great grandmother's all day simmering with the meat product sauce. Just adding some vegetables and tomatoes, and that tomato increases your lycopene 50% after just 2 minutes of cooking, and after 30 minutes, you get a 250% increase in lycopene. So just, you know, dicing up some vegetables and garlic and mushrooms and throwing in some tomatoes, you're really going to have a very nutrient-dense, cancer-fighting sauce for your pasta, as opposed to just that ragu in the jar that really doesn't have much in the way of nutrients and oils. So it's a good way to look at things. And, you know, so we've talked about fiber and we've talked about different phytonutrients. And I guess the take-home message, you know, is the color on your plate. The more color you have, the more phytonutrients, the more antioxidants. The more brown things, the more free radicals that you generate, the more potential you have for DNA damage. I mean, there's some things that we get a little DNA damage that can cause a cancer cell to start by a lot of ways, whether we breathe in things or we're exposed to toxic chemicals that we didn't even know about. But if you have lots of nutrients and antioxidants, you know, you can combat a lot of that stuff. So another thing is exercise. You know, exercise as it relates to, I hate to bring up the weight part of it, but you know, the being overweight is a significant risk factor for breast cancer. So one way, you know, I always, you know, it's pretty difficult to exercise yourself lean, but it certainly has some benefits. So I guess let's talk about, you know, this the topic of being overweight or obese, which is difficult because of body image, and of course the new body shaming at this, you know, that's kind of out there now, but there really is, from a health standpoint, a huge risk from being overweight, especially, you know, unfortunately, women tend to carry weight in the middle, especially after childbearing years, and those and that adipose is very active hormonally.
Yeah, I think it's a very good conversation to have because body shaming is an issue. You know, as well as other forms of bullying, no matter what age you are in our country. But the unfortunate thing that has come up with the increase in awareness of such real issues is, you know, we place our personal value on our image and on our weight, which I do not think it should be, you know, and that's what the awareness is supposed to be brought out, that it's more of who you are as an individual, you know, what you do, your intellect, how you're contributing to life here on earth, you know, the kind of person you are, that should be where your value is placed. But so we've kind of taken away from, you know, your weight being where your value is placed and physical appearance, but it's almost sabotaged the whole effect because now it's almost as if it's okay to be overweight because that's not where your value comes in. But the fact of the matter is it's not okay. And it's not from an appearance wise, you know, beautiful at every size is a very true statement. You can be beautiful at every size, but unfortunately you cannot be healthy at every size, and it's a touchy subject with a lot of emotions attached to it. Something that I've dealt with personally as well, but it's a conversation that needs to be had because of the issues with connections to a variety of lifestyle diseases, which cancer has become. It can be categorized into those lifestyle diseases because of the choices we make. So being comfortable in our own skin is wonderful and a necessity for a happy, healthy life, but also focusing on a healthy weight for our quality of life and our health and, you know, empowering yourself that way in terms of, you know, goals for health for yourself and doing them in a healthy way and, you know, not the dieting route, but rather a lifestyle change and changing our mindset that way.
Yeah, we know that adipose tissue, they produce adipokines, which are these biologically active polypeptides, and they include tumor necrosis factor and interleukin-6 and leptin and adiponectin, and these and also C-reactive protein is seen more often increased in people that are overweight, and all these are cancer stimulators or cancer risk. So by getting rid of the adipose cells, you're actually decreasing your cancer risk. So if we talk about, you know, physical activity, you and I shared a paper that we reviewed on exercise and breast cancer. And basically, you know, there was a decreased risk of breast cancer with exercise at any age. But interestingly, there was the most decrease was actually seen in postmenopausal women. And so I thought that was very interesting because, unfortunately, that's kind of when we see people stop exercising. And the weight goes up. So typically at menopause, people, you know, you see people packing on 20, 30 pounds, and they decrease their exercise. I remember I used to, you know, the weight training has never been one of my favorite things. I like it once I get started, but it's really hard for me to start lifting weights. You know, I do everything except, and once I get started, I like it, but I've often, you know, my mind wonders, and I thought, you know, I've often thought, well, when are you cured? When are you, you know, when can you stop all this stuff that you've got physically fit enough that you can just ride it out and be cured of, you know, becoming flabby and cured of becoming, the answer is that decreasing muscle, you can't. So you can't really ever stop. And the reality of it is it's actually more important than ever at menopause to increase weight training and increase exercise, both from a muscle loss standpoint because of hormone changes and because of the risk of the decrease in breast cancer risk that you can do.
As I will also tack on another one, osteoporosis as well, you know, weight bearing activities, muscles pulling on the bones with strength training, running, you know, things of that nature where you are putting force into the ground have been proven to decrease your risk for development of osteoporosis as well as sarcopenia, which is muscle loss with age. And then, you know, people want to know, well, how much and, you know, how vigorous, what types of activity. And, you know, while movement in any form is beneficial to a certain degree, you know, you need to get to a point where it is to moderate to vigorous intensity. So you're getting your heart rate 60 to 80% of your max, and you're getting a heavy breathing, a good sweat on, you know, you're putting some stress on your body that is good stress, that is needed stress. You're getting your blood flowing, and, you know, that's been shown about 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week on a regular basis is what's the beneficial number to these cancer preventative type of lifestyle changes.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So that I think it's great that, you know, we, the Fitbits and the VivioFits and the step counters, but you need to get the little huffing and puffing. There was a guy that he was the oldest man to ever complete Ironman Hawaii. And when they asked him about his training regimen, he said, you know, every day he would go out and he trained fairly slow, but he always made sure that he got a little bit of the huffing and puffing going, just kind of rev the engine up. So always kind of think about it, you know, when you're coming in and the last bit, a little bit of exercise, do something to kind of rev the engine up a little bit. You breathe deep, you know, you get rid of toxins, you get the heart rate up and you get a little extra benefit. You know, oftentimes we're worried about, I don't know, overdoing more than, you know, than we need to be. The other thing that that the paper showed as far as how physical activity might decrease breast cancer, and it's been shown that, you know, there's a decrease in androgens, an increase in sex hormone binding globulins, a decrease in total estrogen production. And of course, if you decrease your body mass index and abdominal fat, you decrease leptin production and increase adiponectin. Your insulin levels go down, your insulin and growth hormones go down, and those can all perhaps play a role in, you know, how being active and being physically active can decrease your breast cancer risk. So, you know, I think all that is quite interesting, and it's kind of a shame, again, when we look back at school-age kids, so we're feeding them dairy and taking away physical education classes, which is really setting the, especially girls up, I think, for bad things. You know, and you don't know, Addie, but, you know, shortly before I guess in the probably 50s, the Title IX came through. So there didn't used to be girls' team sports. You know, it started out with half-court basketball because everybody's afraid that, you know, a girl, if she did sports, would, you know, her uterus would fall out and she'd die, and that they didn't. But when Title IX came, you know, it was okay for girls to exercise, for girls to be there was actually, you know, money given for collegiate sports and for scholarships. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, girls could play on different, you know, it could be mixed league teams as far as little league and basketball and things like that. But now that we're taking physical education out of classes, you know, out of the schools, it's kind of regressing a little bit, you know, as far as that goes. So, I mean, as a parent, you know, I'd really encourage people to, you know, if the school that your child goes to has a decrease in physical education classes, you know, these, you know, rec leagues, to look into those in different sporting activities that are, you know, privately funding, because I think it's huge to have a kid involved in athletics from an early age, so that, you know, that they get that sense of wanting to move and being comfortable moving.
Yeah, I think it's definitely important, you know, and kind of tying back to, you know, body image and self-esteem too. Sports provides a lot of, you know, that confidence building that's necessary, and, you know, getting people out of your comfort zone, you know, it's talking about all stages of life, whether it's out of your comfort zone and a social situation with, you know, lifestyle changes, or out of your comfort zone with your kids starting a new sports team. It helps you grow. It makes you better. And I just think, with this podcast in general, you know, breast cancer is a very serious subject. And, you know, it's affected a lot of people, a lot of families, a lot of homes and hearts have been hurt by this disease. But I think this podcast is so empowering with the information we're sharing, and the nutrition side with cancer, because, you know, empower yourself with your knowledge of what you can do. It's not just something, you know, along with these other lifestyle diseases that are afflicting our society that we talk about, it's not something that just has to happen to you. You know, you can do a lot to try and prevent it, and might as well give it yourself a fighting chance against everything. You know, I come from a very long line of strong women, as most of you who know my family would know that. And it's, you know, empower yourself, educate yourself, you know what you're up against and go down swinging. So to all you ladies out there, and if you're a man listening to this, you know, inform the ladies in your life as well of the preventative ways, get involved in their life, help your wives and your daughters by increasing their nutritional health and increasing physical activity in your home, instead of when, you know, your spouse or someone wants to do some lifestyle changes and maybe not getting on board because of personal preferences, but looking at it as a fact that you are adding to the quality of life and the years to your family, and really taking it on as a family and educating the whole group to battle this.
Yeah, I think that's very, very well said. You know, when people come into the office and they're healthy and the other person's not healthy, it doesn't mean that you can't become unhealthy at any time. And like we say, these cancers can be smoldering. So working as a team approach to making your family more healthy through nutrition and exercise is a win-win for everybody. And I'm certainly glad that I pushed you in the pool at 5 and drug you on soccer fields and made you play center when you weren't tall enough to get your exercise going. But now your payback's to me with sending me weight workouts that make me sore for a couple days in a row. So turnabout is fair play. And it's always, you know, we have a lot of memories together with exercise around it. Some great and some funny and some not so funny. But I think it is it's great for people to do all this together as a family. So with that, thank you for joining me this afternoon. And yes.
Happy Tuesday and happy October, everyone.
Yes, happy October. It's fall. And we didn't even mention pumpkin. You know, it is pumpkin season, which have a lot of nutrients. I think I mentioned the last podcast. So eat your pumpkin. Please go to the website and check us out at drdelaney.com. It's drdulaney. You can email Addie at drdelaney.com and myself at jamie@drdelaney.com. And we'll look forward to hearing from you. Have a good afternoon.